on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Hello and welcome along to another 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, the show we wrap up all of your latest local sports news. On today's show, I chat to Cambridge City Director Roger De Stacra and the assistant manager at the Lilywhites, Neil Midgley, after they've recently pledged their support to the FA's new Equality in Football Leadership Code by appointing Roger as the club's Equality and Diversity Lead. I chat to both about what the role means and how they are hoping to make the club more inclusive for everyone. Now, the 10 winners of this year's Cambridge FA Grassroots Football Awards were announced last week, and we had two of the winners on the show. Stacey Fullicks, the official of the year, and Simon Rose from Cottenham United Colts, who won the Team of the Year. Today, we'll be chatting to another two winners, Ben Yeomans, who won the Grassroots Coach of the Year in Youth Football for his work at Trumpington Football Club, and Blake Carrington from Melbourne Dynamos, as they won the Project of the Year for their work they do with the Papworth Trust. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can do at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook, the best place to do so. As ever, we love your contributions throughout the show. My name is Ollie Slack. Thanks very much for joining me. Now, before we do anything else tonight, Project Restart in the Premier League has been underway for 2 weeks. So we thought we'd check in with Sky News reporter Joe Rawson once again, who's been covering the games throughout the lockdown so far. Joe, thanks very much for joining us.
No problem.
Now, Joe, we spoke to you a couple of weeks ago. In fact, when the start of the Premier League was back up and running again, I think it was Aston Villa against Sheffield United. How has life been as a sports reporter since then in the bubble, I guess, that is Project Restart?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's been great that football has been back, but it, as people keep saying, football, but not as we know it. And it's a little bit weird when you go into games. The crowd not being there just means that it's almost like going into the office. And I should treat it as a real privilege of one of the few people who are allowed in stadiums, but it's not normal. It is not normal. We have to wear masks as soon as we go into grounds. We have to use hand sanitizer all the time. There's not the talking and banter with other journalists as there usually is. There's no pre-match meal. There's no half-time cup of tea. It's literally, you go into the ground 90 minutes before kickoff, watch the game, do your commentary, do your reporting, and then at full-time, pack up your stuff and go. So it's odd.
I've watched or seen you guys on the telly as well, and of course usually you'd be in the press box or the press area and have a desk out in front of you where you put your laptop on, etc. Assuming now, because you're sort of separated amongst the seats in the stands, have you just got to have like your laptop on your lap and sort of make do?
Well, I'm quite lucky because working in radio, we have to have broadcast points. So we have kept the same desk that we have for the rest of the season. But yeah, newspaper writers and bloggers and people who are doing Twitter feeds, they are sat all over the stand so people can adhere to social distancing. And you're right, yeah, they are just sat with the laptops on the laps. And it's a bit of a problem because there are no PowerPoints for them in the stand. So at half time, you see them all in the concourse trying to find a power plug to charge up the laptops. So it's not ideal, but nothing is ideal at the moment.
No, certainly isn't. And you touched on there being no crowds. We spoke about it last time. It may sound like an obvious question, but has it been really noticeably different when you walk in the ground? Has it been noticeably different for the players as well? Or, you know, a couple of weeks in, have you sort of got used to it now?
No, I don't think you can ever get used to it. Maybe the players have started to get used to playing without any crowds. But yeah, for me, just no anticipation around games. Usually as soon as you park up and you walk to the stadium and you smell the fried onions and there's already a buzz around the ground, and then you get into the stadium and there's some chanting and it's not there anymore. During games when a team goes a little bit flat, they haven't got the crowd either getting on the back or jeering them up and getting behind them. And I think that it has affected some results. Last night, for instance, Brighton were playing Manchester United 2-0 down at half-time. But notoriously, it's been a tricky place for United to go, the Amex. And I think one of the reasons is the crowd. But United are in good form. They played Brighton off the park in the end because there wasn't that boost during half time, for instance. Graham Potter would have given his team talk, made a couple of changes. Brighton came back out, didn't they? And actually started the second half okay. And you just think, if there had been a crowd in there, you know, getting behind Brighton when they started okay, they may have got an extra 10% out of the players. Whereas, you know, they wasn't able to make a break. So United scored a fantastic goal on the break, 3-0. Game over. So I think it is having quite a big effect on games and the outcome of them.
And because of the fact there's no crowd, one of the potential plus points you mentioned last time was that you'd be able to hear the players and managers a lot more clearly, hear what they say, hear the instructions the managers are giving to their players. Has that added an extra dimension to your reports at all?
It's interesting. I mean, it's more noticeable when you're watching games on TV, I think, without the added crowd effects, which I tend to do. I'm not a fan of the FIFA football crowd effects that people are using on the channels. When you're actually reporting, you can't really hear much. But obviously, watching games on TV, the pitch side microphones pick up a lot and amplify the sound. So it's interesting. I've heard quite a lot of profanities from the managers, particularly Chris Wilder, who's not been happy with how Sheffield United have played in the restart. It's interesting. It adds something, but I think the novelty of that has gone a little bit. And for me, I'd rather have the crowds back.
I think we certainly all would. And of course, those people who go to matches would love to be in the crowd as well. Now, games have started slowly, Joe. Goals and shots per game have dipped. Only 14 of the 25 games that have been goals at half-time as well. I think around about 70% of goals have been scored in the second half. Why do you think that is?
I think there's two bits to it. Firstly, I don't think players are fully fit. Obviously, they had the break and only had 3 or 4 weeks to get back to full fitness, but that wasn't proper training. The first couple of weeks were socially distanced. Players were training on their own, so they only had a couple of weeks of full training. And then since they've been back into it, they're literally playing every 3 or 4 days. you know, Tottenham, for instance, who play tomorrow, they've had an abnormal last week. They've had 6 days without a match, so they're a lucky team. But you look at Sheffield United, who were in the Cup, and Chelsea, who were in the Cup at the weekend, and they've been playing every 3 days. And players can play football every day, but they can't play football at a Premier League level. and I think that's why we're seeing a lull in games at the start. And I think as some teams are getting tired, that's why we're seeing goals scored towards the end of matches, because one team seems to be a bit fitter. There's also the fact you're not getting that initial buzz from walking out to a massive atmosphere provided by a crowd. So it's all a bit lethargic, a little bit relaxed. And it does depend on the players being able to motivate themselves, which I'm sure some find it quite difficult to do.
It certainly must be a challenge for those players. Joe, let's put your money where your mouth is. Put your neck on the line now then. Which team has impressed you the most since the restart, and who are you worried for in the fight for survival at the bottom?
So impressed me most, I have to say, Manchester United have looked fantastic since the restart. They've managed to keep that unbeaten run going. Maybe got a little bit unlucky against Tottenham because they were far the best side in the second half. That was a game that I was at. And since then, they've gone on a winning run. Pogba, being back to full fitness, has slotted in alongside Fernandes, who has just made such a difference for United. What a player he is. What a signing he's been. Rashford has come back and added some pace into the attack. Martial obviously got a hat trick and has looked good. So, Manchester United, but I must mention Liverpool as well, because they have done the job that they were asked to do. They've got over the line and won the title. They eased past Southampton. Looked a little bit sluggish in the game against Everton, but you know, they've done what they needed to do, and now they can put their feet up and relax. In terms of the sides at the bottom, well, no one's looked that good. You'd probably say that Brighton have come out and they've got a couple of back-to-back wins, so they move 6 points clear. But you look at the rest of the teams around the bottom pack, and Norwich, I think we can write them off now, despite Tim Closer saying in a media interview yesterday that he believes they can still stay up. I think he must have been drinking, because they are gone in my mind.
Lockdown hit him hard. He's turned to the drink.
Yes. Aston Villa have struggled to score goals all season, and since coming back, they've struggled still, and I think that could be the reason they go down. Bournemouth are in a horrendous run of form, and they are without Callum Wilson now for a couple of games because he's suspended. So they again have struggled to score goals, and without Wilson in the side. And the one thing I would say, want to mention about Bournemouth as well, they failed to get Ryan Fraser to sign a contract extension. And you look at the stats, and most of Callum Wilson's goals come from Ryan Fraser. And without him, they have really struggled to create. So they're in trouble. West Ham, again, they can't buy a win at the minute. So he's gonna go right down to the wire. It is so close between that bottom five. And you just need one to string together a couple of wins and it will be enough for survival. But none of them look like they're able to do that at the minute.
Well, we'll reevaluate, Joe, in a couple of weeks and check up on that fight for survival down at the bottom. For now, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much again for coming on, Joe, and we'll speak again soon.
Pleasure.
Joe Rawson there, Sky News reporter, covering and keeping you across all the Premier League games so far in Project Restart. There are three games tonight that have got underway already at 6 o'clock. They are Bournemouth against Newcastle, Everton, Leicester and Arsenal versus Norwich. There is one more game tonight at 8:15. That is West Ham United against Chelsea. You can watch them, of course, but make sure you just turn the sound down and keep the radio on as ever. Got some great shows lined up on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Now, let's move on to Cambridge City, and they have appointed a equality and diversity lead onto their board. Roger de Sacroix is the man who has been given the title after City pledged their support to the Equality and Football Leadership Code that was released by the FA a couple of weeks ago. I'm glad to say I'm joined now by Roger and City Assistant Manager Neil Midgley to talk about this role. Thanks very much for coming on the show, both of you.
No problem, Ollie.
Thank you.
Let's start then with the news that was announced a couple of weeks ago that Cambridge City have appointed an Equality and Diversity Lead onto the board. This was off the back of the fact that Paul Elliott, the chair of the FA Inclusion Advisory Board, had urged the game to make a commitment to diversity and inclusion, both in boardrooms, senior administration roles and coaching roles as well. Earlier this month, Cambridge City then declared their support to this code by appointing yourself, Roger, as the Equality and Diversity Lead. Just first of all, just provide us a bit of context to what was said in the letter from Paul Elliott and how the decision came about to appoint yourself into the role.
Well, Paul's comments came on the back of the Black Lives Matters campaign. And as he's the head of the advisory board at the FA, he really wanted, this letter really focuses on the importance of ensuring, I'm quoting here, ensuring that our boardrooms and leadership positions reflect the societies we live in and the people who play the game. We need to lead this change, he said, whilst in helping to combat discrimination, help us to be much more effective. So this very much focuses on the leadership in football. And I believe what the FA want to do is to set up a 3-month consultation period and then set out a voluntary code of practice, which we will all be asked to sign up to. And they'll be setting some equality targets. So this all comes about, I think, at a time when there's a much greater awareness about equality, which is felt in all levels of society. And whilst Cambridge City have long been a supporter of the Let's Kick It Out of Racism campaign, all these recent happenings, together with this lead from Paul Elliott, in setting up this code of equality in football leadership. That provides us with a great opportunity to look at what more we need to do at Cambridge City to create an inclusive environment for everyone involved in football, and also to make sure that everyone who comes to the club is treated with dignity and respect, and in particular to work and watch football in an environment in which they're made welcome and feel safe without threat of intimidation, victimisation, harassment and abuse. So that was the reason that that we set up this post, and I was asked to step into it.
Hmm. And Neil, football is often said to be a reflection of society in many ways. And Roger touched on there making sure football leads the way in the fight against racism. Is there a hope that, you know, with this code, that eventually racism could be stamped out in football, and then that will then reflect back into society, and hopefully we'll see an improvement there as well?
I think that's the hope. Yeah, obviously the hope, Ollie. We've had countless campaigns of kick it out, racism, etc. over the years. I think I've seen an improvement steadily. Certainly, it's obviously still prevalent around within football. With the discussion with Roger I've had, you know, we're trying to look at our football club and what we can do. Obviously, with moving into Sawston in the hopefully the next year or so, this is something that we hold very important. And it can be a very sensitive subject, but it's certainly something that, you know, needs addressing and needs to be kept at the forefront all the time. Very often I've seen campaigns go ahead and nothing seems to happen. Then we have another one a couple of months later, and again, it sort of gets pushed by the wayside. So I'm hoping, you know, this time that we really will see a really strong change.
Yeah, Paul Elliott mentioned in the letter, didn't he, that he doesn't want the Black Lives Matters campaign in football to be like an empty gesture, was the quote. You know, there might be many people listening to this also thinking, well, neither do I. They want to try and keep that momentum going and making sure it doesn't stop. I guess the question would be how can we all as a collective make sure we do that and make sure the momentum is moving in the right direction?
Yeah, I think first of all, you got to look at your own football clubs, and that's what, you know, Roger's done and he's asking for my help with as well. And we're very much going to look at what we can do within our club and get support from the FA and the Football League and see how we can change things. Because like you said, football is a representative of society. It's the most popular game in England. It's watched by millions on TV. You know, kids from all walks of life. And again, touching on equality and diversity, all cultures seem to enjoy football. So it's something that can lead the way. And looking at the Premier League players, what they're starting to do, I think's magnificent. And I hope the rest of football carries that on. And I'm proud that Cambridge City are not staying silent.
And with regards to fans coming to stadiums as well, is it very much a, you know, an all-inclusive thing that as fans we can do stuff as well, as I said, as a collective, to make sure the momentum continues?
Yes, I mean, I think so, because, you know, this needs to involve everyone. So it's really important this is led from the top, but it's as well as the people who play football, it's absolutely crucial that this involves the people that that watch football, our fans, and for the opposing team's fans. So everyone is involved, and this is why, although it's absolutely crucial to have an equality policy, to have some set standards and codes of practice to make sure that there's zero tolerance around these things, but there's also it's really important to engage with people, to engage with our supporters, to engage generally. So, you know, there's quite a strong element of information and education here, really, and hopefully that will be part two once we've decided what we need, where the gaps are, what we need to change, set up some plan. That's the point where we need to start helping people to see the reason for that, and put it within the context of helping people to, you know, to understand why all this is so important.
Hmm. And Roger, you mentioned earlier on about targets. It was also mentioned in the letter and around the FA want to set out targets and almost collate data in a way to track the progress being made. Are you aware at the moment what these targets may be, or is this something that will be discussed further down the line?
No, I'm not. In fact, I think that's why Paul Elliott, I think he's been quite careful here not to sort of impose any targets himself. He talks about a three-month consultation period, so hopefully we're all going to be involved in this. It's going to affect all levels of football, so Premiership football, league football, and also semi-professional and grassroots. And it's something we're all invited to make a representation to. But obviously, you know, there are lots of different parts of the country, there are different demographics. So I think, to a certain extent, I think we will perhaps be asked to set some of our own targets and work towards those.
And you mentioned the word education there as well, Roger, and you've previously worked with Equality and Diversity at the Hertfordshire County Council as well. So you've worked in the segment previously. And you said you mentioned education. It's a big word and often used a lot when spoken about the matter. How do you actually go about educating the community and I guess trying to make real change there?
Yes, I mean, I think a lot's happened. It's interesting. I've talked to a couple of people today, part of the Black community, and they feel that this Black Lives Matter campaign has, in fact, one of them said to me, it's changed everything. The two people I was speaking to feel it's made a real impact, both in their communities, and feeling quite a strong sense of solidarity. And of course, social media is so important here as well. And those two people I've been talking to feel that there's much more awareness around now. I mean, not just about racial inequality, other areas of inequality as well. And I think that's why we really have to build on this. And I think the campaign has been remarkable because it's been a peaceful campaign. And I think people have gained a lot of strength from this. But it's as with anything else, it has to be accompanied by information. It's got to be, I think we've got setting out some very strong messages at lots of different levels in society, at football clubs, in schools, in all sorts of other settings. Hopefully there will now be a strong drive to try to change things and to try to put this on the top of the agenda. You know, the media can help a lot here as well, and very often the right messages aren't put across by the media.
Well, let's certainly hope it's been, as I said, put at the top of that agenda. And Neil, you said as well, you've seen positive but slow change over the past 25 years. Could you share perhaps some of those experiences of that change, and so then what still needs to be done in your eyes within football?
Yes, I'm obviously in the coaching and management staff now. League's Cambridge City player, and I see a mix of players of different backgrounds and cultures, which is a pretty decent representative of society. But then I think that wasn't quite the case when I first started football, but that has slowly got better, I believe. Moving slightly higher into the ranks, I think there can be, again, there's a lot of talk about Black coaches. There's not a representation of the amount of Black players moving into coaching. Why is that? I still think that needs to be addressed. And again, moving up to the board level, I think that again gets thinned out even more. So again, there has been, like I said, been some change, but there's still a lot of room for more change within football.
And there was also an interesting study released yesterday, in fact, from a Danish research firm called Run Repeat, that this is in sort of punditry and commentary, so a different aspect of football. But they uncovered that lighter skinned players are more widely praised for the likes of intelligence, hard work and quality, whereas darker skinned players are six times more likely to be talked about with regards to power and three times more likely to reference their pace as well. Does this sort of article, Neil, just demonstrate or underline how deeply it runs in all aspects of football?
Yeah, I think it's something that's actually now backed up with stats. Previously, you could be highlighted by someone having an opinion, but actually the backing up with stats now, again, is showing that there is a slight issue there. My personal experiences, yes, you certainly heard comments, regular comments on a player of a certain skin colour gets a certain tag. And I think, again, it comes down to what Roger's talked about in terms of educating people again now within football to start with, that this is not right. This is not, you cannot go ahead and just say those things now. We have moved on from those days. So, yeah, again, I think education is the key to this. Like I said before, I think the Black Lives Matter has made people aware, a lot more aware of what actually is going on.
Mm. And lastly, Roger, from you, with regards to obviously your role in the Equality and Diversity Lead at Cambridge City on the board, have you got a place in your head, in your mind, of where you'd like Cambridge City to be further down the line with regards to equality and diversity? Have you got an end goal?
Yes, I mean, I think it's an ongoing process. So, yes, it's going to be, hopefully you always strive towards there and hopefully you get there, but there'll always be work to be done. But I mean, I think we have a great opportunity moving to Salston. You know, I'd like to see us when we move there. We are already a family-friendly club, and I'd like to see us being able to welcome everyone there, irrespective of their ability, disability, the colour of their skin, and feel that they are welcome and safe, and they can come and enjoy football there. But it's a long haul. This isn't something which is going to which we're going to tackle necessarily over the next year or 18 months. I would like to think we will have our equality policy in place. We'll have some clear standards and the code of practice. We will have addressed, or at least know and be starting to address, some of the key issues that people are telling us that need to change. And you know, we were talking earlier about education and helping people. I mean, I think a lot of this is that when you do training on equality and diversity, very often the first thing you have to do is to help people to face some of their own sort of misconceptions and perhaps prejudices. We all have prejudices. You know, we often come to quick conclusions about things that we haven't fully thought through. And I think so much of this is actually helping people to see how they behave towards other people and what impact it has on them. And that's one of the ways that you can bring about some change. So hopefully when we move to Salston, and before we move to Salston, people will be able to come to see us as a club that they want to come and watch their football at, because they see us as a family friendly club in which they are respected and welcomed for who they are.
Yeah, Salston definitely has a feel of a new dawn with regards to Cambridge City and presenting plenty of opportunities that come with that. Neil, I just want to get your thoughts lastly before we let both of you go on matters on the pitch. Tom Gardner, obviously City defender for the back end of last season, helping keep 7 consecutive clean sheets in that magnificent run, has now signed for the upcoming season, whenever that may be, of course, but really positive news nonetheless.
Yeah, it's great news from the playing side for Cambridge City. Tom's an established Conference South football player. We had him at the club briefly under Gary Roberts, and the club's obviously made an impression on him, and we're able to sign someone like that now is certainly a big coup for Cambridge City. He said the 7 clean sheets kept at the back end of the season. Tom was a massive part of that. He gave the other guys around him confidence. He's calm on the ball. He's calm without the ball. And he's a very good professional, to be honest. I'm really looking forward to working with him next season.
And of course, we know that both yourself and Robbie and everyone in the club, in fact, obviously want to make City progress and get them back to a level where they're used to be and perhaps where they should be as well, is the signing of, or the re-signing of Tom, and having that blend of his experience and some of the younger players coming through as well, a crucial element in trying to do that.
Yeah, very crucial. Yeah, we're at a rebuilding stage, and we have been for a few years, to be honest. We have been, you know, without a ground for a very, very long time, and every year we're out of a ground, the harder we feel the impact on us. So there feels like you said, start of a sort of new dawn here at Cambridge City with a lot of talk about Thorsten now. And hopefully that will reflect on the pitch. And I know Robbie's getting very excited and so am I. And we're really looking forward to next season and hopefully the seasons after that and progressing Cambridge City to move up the ranks of non-league football and establish themselves rightly where we believe we should be.
Well, if your football tennis skills are anything to go by, then hopefully you should start the new season whenever that is, very, very strongly indeed. Neil, Roger, thanks very much for joining me and, of course, wish you all the best when the season gets going, but I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ollie.
On Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yep, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's talk about the Cambridgeshire FA Grassroots Football Awards winners now. And I said last week we covered two winners, Stacey Fullocks, who won the Match Official of the Year, and Simon Rose from Cottenham United Colts, who won the Club of the Year. This week we've got another two winners to talk to. Ben Yeomans, who won the Grassroots Coach of the Year in Youth Football, and Blake Carrington from Melbourne Dynamo. So let's start with Ben Yeomans then. Many of our listeners, of course, will know him from Cambridge United Women, who we cover regularly throughout the football season. Ben, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, bud.
Good to see you. How have you been over the last couple of months? I think it's a few weeks since we last spoke.
Yeah, I've been good. Back to work in some capacity now, which is giving me a little bit more normality than the last few months. Exhausting, physically exhausting. Forgotten how much hard work it is. But no, yeah, enjoying being back and I'm good. I'm all good.
Good to hear. Glad you're well. Let's talk about the Cambridge FA Grassroots Awards because you managed to pick up the Grassroots Coach of the Year for Youth Football. So congratulations. How did it feel when the award was announced?
You know what, it was a complete surprise. I was actually in the middle of running a little virtual Zoom training session for some Chesterton girls and my phone just started blowing up. And then when the end of the session came, I checked it out and I didn't even know the awards were going on. So it was a complete surprise. I mean, someone must have nominated me, but no idea who, no idea when. So no, absolutely chuffed.
And Mark Bonner announcing the award as well, a nice little bonus.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Someone, or he's a name that I've known for a long time. I mean, I've been in coaching for 10 or so years now. I've dipped my toes in sort of the Cambridge United environment once upon a time. And he's a name that's always cropped up and someone who I've always heard good things about as a coach. And obviously where he is now is a credit to that. So yeah, very nice to get some recognition from him.
It must be an interesting feeling as well though, Ben, because for all the work you do throughout the county, you do so much with football, of course, playing as well, but coaching and managing, of course, the Cambridge United women's side too. How nice is it actually to be recognised for all of that and those achievements, albeit specific to Trumpington, but to get some recognition for all the top work you do?
You know what? It is really nice. I won the awards once back in 2014. So that's like 6 years ago now. And I remember then I was completely chuffed. Absolutely over the moon. Like I say, I was young then. I was, what, 22 then, and it came as a surprise then. But it's always nice to get recognition. It's not what you do it for. I've been doing this for, like I say, 10 or so years now, and I don't seek to win awards and things like that. But when somebody has obviously gone out their way to mention me, in the hope that this award goes to me, that kind of feeling is really nice, you know, to know that I'm impacting lives of whether it's children, parents, managers, teams in a positive way is why you do it, you know. So no, very, very pleasing.
And you've been at Trumpington now since it was founded 3 years ago and all the way to where it is now. Just explain the process and the work that's gone into building the club, because if I'm not saying it won Club of the Year last year, you've now got eight teams as well. So it's some building job that's gone on there, but clearly proving worthwhile.
This is it. So through my coaching company, Over and In, we've been coaching in Trumpington for 7 years or so. That kind of organically became our hub. And we soon realised there was no actual football team in Trumpington. And our sort of business model without giving too much away on radio, is coaching for Colts teams and mini league teams, and it's something that we were the first to do, and something that our business is kind of based around, and it's working extremely well. But what we found with our development coaching with our kids in Trumpington is that once they got to 7 or 8 years old, where they wanted to join a team, that there was no natural conveyor belt in Trumpington. They'd move from us and they'd go to your other local sides, and what you'd soon realise is that those sides were full up. And look, from a young age, from 15, 16, it's always baffled me why the quality of coaching isn't higher at local level. You look at any other sport, you look at tennis, you look at swimming, you pay for tennis coaching, you pay for swimming coaching, yeah, but in football it's all run by, no disrespect to dads, and it's all voluntary. Now that's just purely because of the volume of the game. But I've always had this brainchild of wanting to offer that sort of coaching service to local teams. So the Trumpington team was very much just kind of a brainchild of mine, and I had the help of 3 or 4 unbelievably willing volunteer parents to get the club off the ground. We take any ability. We tier our abilities almost like a school curriculum system where kids go different sort of ability levels in their English classes, math classes. That's exactly how we run the ethos of the club. And like you say, over the last 3 years, we've gone from 0 teams to 18. So we expected 2 in our first year. We had 6. We then evolved to 12, to 17, to 18. We've got ourselves 1 girls team, hopefully 2 come September. We run a disability session on a Sunday morning. We got invited to be an FA hub club, which is, well, we're 1 of 6 or 7 teams in the county that are kind of a bit of a think tank for FA initiatives and things like that. And our secretary, bless her, who's unfortunately decided to step down this year, she won Volunteer of the Year last year. And like you mentioned, we won Community Club of the Year last year as well. So we've gone from strength to strength as a club, and it shows just the pure volume of players involved in the club and the growth we've had, how needed it was in Trumpington as a bit of an area for children. You know, the size of the area is growing massively month by month with the housing developments there, the schools that are new there, and it was something, like I say, that was needed. So really happy to be a part of it from the start, and hopefully for years to come.
Well, clearly all the hard work is paying off, and well done to you for say getting involved and making a real difference. Am I right in saying as well you've helped out some of the coaches at the club as well? And if so, how difficult or challenging is that, going from perhaps talking to, say, a small child or a kid, and then trying to then relay information to an adult?
Well, do you know what? That's part of the job I enjoy. I have a genuine passion for coaching, and a genuine passion for coaching at grassroots level. I've had opportunities for the last 7 or 8 years to move into sort of the professional side of the game. But this grassroots is really where my heart is. It's where I feel that the quality of coaching is needed most. So educating managers, coaches at the same time to then share that with kids independently without me is part of the job that I love. The coaches in Trumpington, they're all kind of my coaches. But the managers, so we run things slightly differently. We, as a coaching team, we run the training for all the teams through the week, and then the managers take them on the match day. So we take that burden from the managers, and all they've got to worry about is a Saturday morning. But we're there every Saturday morning helping them referee, or standing with them on the sideline giving them tips on how to deal with the kids if someone's having a bit of a strop, or how can they encourage someone who's a bit lacking in confidence and things. So we're always there in the background to help these managers, but like I say, don't want to kind of do it for them. So it's a lovely way the club is run. The community feel we've got in the club, from the top age groups to the lowest age groups, everybody kind of knows each other, and it's a great environment to be a part of.
Well, I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm delighted you won.
Because thank you, bless you.
Well, just from obviously covering Cambridge United women like I do, seeing all the hard work you put in there, and then speaking to people, it's clearly replicated across a number of teams and across the county. So once again, congratulations, Ben.
Thank you, mate.
Let's move on to a slightly different matter, though. Cambridge United Women, of course, we don't know when the season will start, or perhaps we do. Do you have any news at all on when the national league season for the girls will get going?
Do you know what? I wish I had some information. Absolutely no idea. I mean, naturally, I'm hoping it will be around September at some point. Football, like the Premier League's come back. There's whispers of step three, step four, step five football coming back from a men's point of view. So it can't be too far away. There's whispers of Women's Super League and Championship sort of coming back, but we've not been given anything concrete. We're not back at training yet as a group. We've been told by the women's sort of committee that there'll be at least a 6-week pre-season in place. Well, they'll try and give us 6 weeks preparation time. So we've over the lockdown, we've been in close contact as a group, the team, the staff. We've got everything in place, ready to rock and roll. Pre-season plans, pre-season plans, just to kind of get the girls prepped and ready for when we do go back. So we're looking forward to it. We're as ready as we can be, but no dates yet whatsoever.
Is it a feeling though that because we've been disrespectful that the women's game at the level you play at doesn't necessarily rely on gate money, therefore it'd be perhaps similar to the recreational side of things, and that when they're given the green light to play, you can be? Of course, Cambridge United men's side have got the challenge of trying to fit spectators into the stadium and social distance them to get that reliable gate money in. But with yourselves and the likes of Cambridge City and other local teams, there's less of a need for that. So you could potentially get going maybe slightly earlier.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know how the process works in terms of the powers that be and how they choose the priority order. Like you say, with large crowds going to professional games, it's much harder for them to give it the green light. But like you say, it's one of them where, like you say, the Premier League started now behind closed doors. They don't necessarily need the gate money as much as the lower league teams. But if you look at the order of that sort of the priority, the Premier League coming first, it's only natural that League One, League Two will come before us. But I'd like to think we can get back as soon as possible. And like you say, without the masses of crowds, then it may be a bit easier. Maybe not as much as Cambridge United's, but we do rely on the gate money. Like I say, we're all volunteers and we try and keep the costs as low as possible for the girls. So that gate money and teas and coffees and things like that is always helpful. Like I say, paying St Neots for the superb facility they give us. So I'd like to think we'll get back soon, and if we're playing behind closed doors for a couple of months or whatever, then I'd much rather that than not play at all. So,
well, fingers crossed, whatever circumstances, not too far away. Ben, pleasure to talk to you as ever. Congrats once again on winning the award, and hopefully we've got some football to talk about soon as well.
Ollie, thank you very much. Always a pleasure, bud. Speak soon.
Ben Yeomans there, who picked up the Grassroots Coach of the Year in the Cambridge FA Grassroots Football Awards. Let's talk to another award winner now in Blake Carrington from Melbourne Dynamos, as they picked up the Project of the Year. Blake, thanks very much for coming on the show.
No problem at all, Ollie. Thank you.
Now, first of all, before we get on to the Cambridge FA Grassroots Awards, how has lockdown been for you? Of course, over the last few months, many of us have been at home. How have you been?
Working from home. Mostly football-wise, obviously very frustrated. We're working towards getting back to training with our working hard on our risk assessment. I know some clubs have gone back. We haven't yet, but we're working towards getting all the kids, girls and boys, and the men out on the pitch soon, hopefully.
With regard to the Grassroots Awards, well, I should have really started with saying congratulations, because Melbourne Dynamos have won the Grassroots Project of the Year. What was the reaction at the club, Blake, when it was announced on social media?
Oh, it's been absolutely fantastic. I mean, it was totally unexpected, I have to say. So I got an alert from one of the managers, actually, who picked it up from Cam's FA. So we all obviously logged straight on there and watched Josh announce the award, which was absolutely brilliant for everybody. The team themselves, the Owls, they were all very, very enthusiastic. And the coach was completely made up. So brilliant. Brilliant for the club, and superb reaction, as you would expect. You know, it's a brilliant award for us to receive.
Mm. Yeah, the Project of the Year is an interesting award, in that it for me, it almost underlines the whole Grassroots Awards, and that it's a project, it's to do with involving the community and trying to be as inclusive as possible.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so that's something that we were founded in 2003 with only one team of under sevens. Now fast forward to where we are now, 320 players, 43 coaches, 23 teams, and the Owls is, at the moment, you know, the icing on the cake for us. It's where we want to go with our development, you know, to offer everybody, as many people as possible, whatever their ability or disability, the opportunity to get involved and enjoy football, either competitively or socially. So the project, working towards that, that's been ongoing for 18 months now with fantastic support from CAMS FA. And we're delighted to be in a position now to offer this absolutely fantastic group of guys the opportunity to play and represent the club as well. But so it's absolutely fantastic for everybody.
Yeah, before we actually come on to the project, just quickly, Josh Coulson, as you mentioned, announcing it as well. That was a nice little bonus, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant. And the coach knows him, so that was, you know, absolutely
excellent.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. But thanks to Josh for doing that. I know it was, you know, obviously took his time out to do that. So.
Yeah, great to see some local heroes get involved as well. And with regards to the project then, just give us, for people who don't know, a bit of background info, what the project is, how the club gets involved. I believe with a pact with trust.
That's right. So Gail Williams, she is one of Packworth Trust's activities facilitators. And until very recently, her son represented played in one of our age groups, one of our older age groups. So Gail was, as we would call her, probably a club mum. And she was working with this group of adults with disabilities as part of her day job with Packworth Trust. And that's a regular thing she does, obviously. I think there's about two dozen guys who is part of her group. So she from a fitness point of view and all the rest of it, wanted to engage them in sport. Thought about football, obviously. Gail's well into a football, so it was an obvious fit for her. She approached a club as just to sort of perhaps sound off a few ideas about how they could become involved. Spoke to CAMS FA Sarah Hudson there, who leads on the disability football. So we then, having spoken to Sarah and Gail, we decided that the club was in a really good place to offer our support to enable them to register with CAMS FA in the Parability League. And they now compete competitively every couple of months, Monk Oldham's Common, with other similar groups. And that's absolutely been fantastic. They train weekly. They play as often as they can. Which has been fantastic. You know, some of the feedback we've been getting from the parents and the guys themselves, you know, it's been really good for their fitness, help their self-esteem and build relationships with people. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I imagine when the decision first came to get involved with the Packworth Trust, it was probably quite a big decision to take at the time, because it's not something you can really sort of do half-heartedly. Once you're involved, you're probably fully committed to it, am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. We're totally committed. It's a big step. It was a big step for us. We were confident as a club that we could handle it. We've got the infrastructure. I've already said, you know, we are an expanding club. We've got the good governance behind it. We know we can cope with it financially, so we can support the team with kit. Which we've done as a club, separately from everything else. And we've been happy to do that, to show that level of commitment, and hopefully. Things will progress. I mean, we've got now the two Owls teams, the development team and the other team, and we've now got, we just started the Jaguars, which is another session, a Saturday morning drop-in session for younger kids with additional needs, and that's building as well, or was building, obviously, until COVID interrupted us, but the plan is obviously to continue that and to grow that as well, so we can offer, you know, even more people an opportunity to get involved.
It must be so rewarding as well to see the joy on the kids' faces as well when they get involved and just make it all worthwhile.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean that's what it's all about for anybody involved in grassroots sport, youth sport and adult sport, such as with the Owls, obviously. You know, that level of excitement, camaraderie, team spirit, well-being, you know, being mindful of each other, respectful for each other, is just fantastic to see. For me, that's what the club and all grassroots sports is all about.
You touched on the future, adding additional sessions for other kids as well. How big can you take the project, Blake, or how big do you want to take it? I guess the possibilities are endless, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we strive to offer as many people the opportunity to get involved as want to get involved. I know one of the other one of our other clubs nearby has offered Saturday morning sessions for kids with special educational needs, and that's got, I know that's absolutely exploded. I mean, the number of people they get in turn up is just hit them, you know, massively, and it's brilliant, you know. We can cope with that level of interest. If, you know, a lot of the parents with youth sport get involved in the coaching, we encourage that and we support them in that to help support the teams going forward. So we'll get it going, and we're the catalyst, and we'll support all the way through, all the way, you know, for as long as they want to get involved. So definitely, the more people that want to get involved and join, absolutely brilliant, the better. Mm.
And one of the talking points when we were discussing yourself on the panel to decide the award winners was that you're thinking of starting as well recreational sessions for adults on the weekend as well.
Yeah, and well, hopefully during the week as well, because we've been leading for 3 years, heavily involved in a project at Melbourne at Melbourne Village College with and CAMS FA and Football Foundation. To secure a brand new full-size 3G facility at Melbourne, which we're hoping, fingers crossed, will be signed off by the Football Foundation very soon. And it, when that comes to fruition, obviously that's going to allow everybody, us, the college and the sports centre and CAMS FA, to offer more opportunity for more people to get involved. And we'll certainly be looking as a club to run sessions, walking football, blind football, any opportunity to get anybody out there in a pair of boots, enjoying the game, getting fit, making friends, as I say, socially or competitively.
Blake, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on winning the award, but also, you know, amazing work you're doing, and wish you all the best for the future.
Thanks, Ollie. Thanks very much. Cheers, mate. Cambridge 105 Radio.